Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot podcast coming your way. First, we talk about one of the hottest, figuratively and literally, teams in the NBA as of right now, the Phoenix Suns, winners of six of the last seven. We have Stephen Prigioni-Garner rejoining the show to break down all things Suns. And then, because Nikola Jokic has been so ridiculous, we had to take some time out to talk about how ridiculous he's been. We've got a full breakdown for you, what makes him so difficult to deal with, and how he has tormented the last two teams that he's played. Have some fun with us. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here, and ready to light things on fire.
Well, let's not do that, but it is going to get hot on this here podcast. We have our first guest of the season, which is also the last guest that we've had on the podcast. A little bit of synergy here as we stick with Phoenix of PHNX Sports, Stephen Prigioni-Garner. Stephen, welcome back. How the heck are you?
Man, I'm blessed as always. Always a great opportunity and time talking ball with y'all two in particular. My favorite podcast. I genuinely appreciate y'all. I think we acknowledged that last time I was on, and I'm glad I can be the first guest since y'all made y'all shift to the new crib. So I'm trying to see what this furniture like in here. What y'all got in the fridge? Let's talk about it.
Oh, man. Well, you see, you know, we got wall art now. It's all different here. I'll tell you what. It's very fancy. But actually, we can stick right there. Last time we had you on, we were talking about the Phoenix Mercury. We had a deep dive there. They end up making the finals run. We are now here to talk about the red hot Phoenix Suns, who as of recording are 8-5. They are winners of six of their last seven. They're one of five teams per clean the glass that's in the top 10 in offense and defense. So just before we actually get into the Suns dive, what are some of the similarities and some of the differences with you covering the Suns group compared to the Mercury group that you just finished covering?
Yeah, similarities. I think the Suns are working towards a culture that the Mercury have already had. And it's a little different on the Mercury side because when you have an all-time great and another all-time great between Diana and BG, that kind of leaves a certain precedent that anybody that comes in understands that they have to get up to that level and sustain on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different for the Suns, but I think they're similarly to the Mercury valuing the people aspect of it and looking at the way those personalities fit together with what it is they're working towards. And you can start to already kind of see the competitive nature that they play with on a nightly basis be akin to what the Mercury have established on the other side. So I think they're doing a good job with that. And then the other thing for me is the defensive activity and the pressure. A lot of switching. They're getting into that. They're very comfortable doing that. No different than the Mercury were. The extended pickup points and the pressure up the court for 94 feet across multiple lineups, I think is unique as well. And kind of allowing for them to control things on a possession by possession basis at the point of attack. And then having some centers and some front court pieces that can do a lot of versatile things. So I think there's a vision that Ishbia and all of the decision makers on each side are working towards. And I think they're very aligned. Suns fans and Mercury fans will love that word being used. I think they're very aligned in the kind of vision they're trying to establish on both sides of basketball right now.
Good. I like it. I like it. All right. Let's get into Jordan Ott, new head coach, and some of the things, as you mentioned, the culture being set in Phoenix and some of the things that he's trying to establish. On a basic note for you, Stephen, what were your expectations, not just of the Suns team heading into the year post Kevin Durant trade, but of the Jordan Ott experience?
Yeah. The first thing I was most excited for, and my co-host over on the Suns podcast could attest to this, it's the outside the box thinking of how to approach playing offense, using guys in unique ways to so that it's not a steady diet of one specific context to play and having dynamic spacing around that. So you have a template, you know, teams are going to want to take away space from Devin Booker. How can you counter that? If you have dynamic spacing, guys have to make choices, and those choices could come with repercussions if the shooters and everything within the dynamic spacing is happening in a timely manner. And I feel like they've kind of tip, they kind of subtly hit the tip of the iceberg with that. I think there's more for them from that, more fruit they can get there. But I think them having that template with Devin Booker, and naturally you can swap him and Jalen Green out and still have those similar type of context of spacing and manipulate things from there, I think is probably the biggest thing I was looking forward to. If they can navigate things more easily in the half court, that makes Devin Booker and Jalen Green's job a lot easier than it's shown to be in recent seasons. And then on the defensive end, thinking outside the box as well, being more involved in that approach and the extended pickup points, some of the switches they get into, some of those fun things. And then the last thing for me, preparation. And Jordan has gotten a niche as a mad scientist in multiple respects because of how maniacal a lot of the accounts of stories that players coming into their first day to the facility saying that he had clips already loaded up for them with their old teams or with the team last season and talking about how he wanted to use them and get more out of them. So I think it's those three things that kind of held highest for me.
Well, let's hang on that last one right there. You talk about maniacal. You know where Jordan Ott started, right?
Yeah.
In the video room in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah.
So video coordinators are a different breed. And so I think for me, when it comes to Jordan Ott and the preseason expectations for the Suns team, I just wanted to see what the attempt was going to be. Obviously, you know, the Suns have gone through many changes. There are no more big three. We have to reset the culture. And you get someone who's been around the league for a long time, but also got a taste of a little bit of everything. Being in Atlanta, then going to Brooklyn throughout their eras, then going to the Lakers under Darvin Ham, and then going to Cleveland. So you have a mismatch of different setups and different times to understand, okay, what do we do with stars? What do we do when we don't have stars? What do we do with when we have a parade of people that can do different things offensively and defensively? So that was intriguing to me. The one big thing that stands out to me is just how he has allowed this roster to play. The irony for me when Nekias Duncan was so very excited to talk about the Phoenix Suns was that they are being firepowered by Dylan Brooks, Royce O'Neal, and Grayson Allen, all players who Nekias Duncan has had different thoughts about while we have been doing this podcast. But to Jordan Ott's credit and to what Stephen was alluding to, these guys are out here involved in the offense in a different way. It's not necessarily, hey, you are in a pick and roll, you are in a dribble handoff. No, you're playing. And so to preseason expectations, for me, it was like, boy, this is a lot of Royce O'Neal. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is a lot of Grayson Allen, man. And then you look up and, hey, those guys are attacking. Grayson Allen's just taking 2-for-1 deep threes. And it's like, well, okay, I understand it now. And the biggest thing was the defense. The defense is what hooked me in to the Suns group in the preseason. And then early in the season, we kind of saw up and down, but we'll get to that. Their activity allowed them to be annoying. I think it's one thing in today's NBA, especially this season, compete level is very important. How much your team can compete on a nightly basis with so many teams going through different things, injuries, Eastern Conference different, Western Conference teams trying to get together. You give yourself a chance every night you can compete. And when you watch the Suns, and I know we're going to talk about defense later, these guys get after it. They're into bodies. They're up to touch. They're switching. They're after. They're physical. That gives them a chance to get out and run on the other end on top of what Jordan Ott does in the half court. So, I mean, I think it's just been a really good blend of establishing a culture, getting buy-in early. You know, you mentioned, hey, I had clips on how I want to use you. That's so important as a coach. Let me not only impart what I want to do for our team, let me get the best out of you. And to Nekias, we talked about the Memphis Grizzlies recently. And my point was, hey, they sure are thinking a lot out there. Mm-hmm. You know what the Phoenix Suns are out there doing? They are playing.
Mm-hmm. I think, actually, quick question for you, Steve, as you mentioned the clips, and Steve has also mentioned clips as well. As someone that was in the video room, like, what is the balance when it comes to showing players clips? Is it 3? Is it 5? Like, how do you kind of balance, this is the vision that I want for you, or this is what I want you to know, without overloading someone? Do you feel like there's a sweet spot in that front?
Well, you dilute it. You dilute it. You always keep it simple to a degree. You don't want to overload with 45,000 clips unless they specifically ask for that. Mm-hmm. So you just want to make whatever your point is, showcase what it is, show them how they can improve, ask them what they saw, and then keep it pushing. Some can do that on the bench with a laptop in front of the world. I don't agree with that methodology, but I wanted to get that off.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun. I think just quickly on the expectations for me, like, this is just going to be a blank slate for me. New coach, Kevin Durant's not there, Bradley Beal's not there, you're shifting to this new era. My initial thought was going to be, or initial questions was, in what were they going to try to establish defensively? So imagine Mike Lee turning on preseason tape and they're just pressing all over the place. Like, oh, it's another team that's adding to this. This is cool. I know that makes Steve very happy. Offensively, I was, you know, we talked about on the pod, this is probably going to be a whole lot of Devin Booker. I was expecting, you know, heliocentric Devin Booker. You're running a whole bunch of ball screens. Let's see if you can generate things that way. And so to your point, Steve, watching preseason tape with the Phoenix Suns, and it's Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen, and everyone is kind of more egalitarian than I thought, anticipated. It's like, okay, this is different. Is this going to be the typical, this is what we want to do, and then after five games it peters off and now it's just going to be Devin Booker ball? Or is this actually going to be a foundation of what they want to do and who they're going to be? And through the early goings of the season, again, it is 13 games still, but yeah, career year Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal a whole lot of usage. Like, they have stuck with that, and I think that trust that's kind of been established early on is paying off right now. Now, the schedule is going to heat up next week and moving forward.
Do you want to talk about it real quick? Do we want to inform the people real quick? Because here's the thing, right? You mentioned the schedule's going to heat up. Do you know how long it's going to heat up for the Phoenix Suns?
It's a hot 10, at least.
Look, here's what popped me, and I'm just going to go through this, and hopefully this bit works. If not, I'll get yelled at later. They play the Hawks on Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
They play at Portland. Mm-hmm. Then it's Minnesota, San Antonio, Houston at home. Then they play the Kings. And then it's at Oklahoma City, home against Denver, at the Lakers, at Houston, at Minnesota, home against Golden State, at Golden State, home against the Lakers, and then Christmas. We're going to find out a lot about the Phoenix Suns. We're going to talk about them, but we're going to find out a lot before the year is up.
That we are. Before we pour out drinks for the Phoenix Suns as they hit their schedule, I want to hang on the offense for a little bit, because, Steven, you talked a lot about the dynamic spacing of the Phoenix Suns. And one of the things that's intrigued me, and it ties into the overall skill set of Devin Booker, is that you can use him in a myriad of ways. It's been fun watching the blend of on and off ball touches just as a basic concept. But the off ball stuff isn't in the same place. The on ball stuff isn't in the same place. You'll have, as we've seen throughout this Devin Booker era period, Booker starts at the baseline, gets a screen from the free throw line, he curls up, now he can just attack quickly or take a quick pull-up, stuff like that. You see that mixed in, you'll see him start positions in the corner, you'll see some of like the early wide action or wide pin downs early in the clock. If Grayson Allen's bringing the ball up the floor, here's a screen 35 feet from the basket with him getting the ball on the catch. Like, I've loved the way that they have moved him around the board. And so could you speak more to the spacing of it all and the way that they moved Devin Booker around the board?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the things I've enjoyed most. Obviously, we knew coming in, he's going to run a lot of pick and roll. He's going to get two to the ball, and then you can play off of that as long as his decisions are sharp, which I'm sure we'll speak to a little bit later for sure. But off the ball, I've enjoyed the, like you said, him, Jordan, not moving Devin all over the chessboard. I've really enjoyed the kind of middle staggers that they set for him, and him being able to, one, work from the middle third of the floor. And I asked Jordan out about this at practice maybe a week or two ago, and he said, yeah, that main reason for it is to keep him in the middle. It's harder to trap him or double him when he's on a move and in the middle third. And also for him, he's already at home if he gets a catch somewhere in the middle of the court. So now you got to deal with him being at his comfort spot on top of it being hard to kind of hit him in those areas. But with those middle staggers, sometimes he rejects that second screen. So he'll come off of the first one, and instead of coming off the second, he'll just split it, going to the mid post. Now he's at a touch at the what would be the kind of logo area. And at that point, he's in zero dribble pull-up area, or he gets to one dribble, or he can kind of get into the mid post from there. Get two to the ball. Now you're right where you want to be still. And you're getting there in a different type of flow. It's a different angle. Stressing and pressuring the defense a little differently. I've also enjoyed with Devin his ability to just kind of go off script at times and everybody kind of sharing an IQ with everything that he's doing. And I think that part is important because to the point that both you and Steve made earlier already, they're just playing basketball. There's principles and they have a script for things they want to do, but everybody has the liberation to go off script if they see something that they can take advantage of. And I think them understanding that and kind of playing off of each other IQ-wise is allowing for them to optimize Booker on the ball while not being over reliant on that part of him and him creating off of that as well. So it's been fun to see him get used off the ball in the ways in which they have. It's been fun to see the elbow action return and them kind of getting into a multitude of different things from him there. I've also enjoyed him in transition, and it's a different element of off the ball, different from the half court. But if he's filling a wing early and there's someone else getting deep in that corner, he's setting a flare screen for that guy in a kind of random fashion, flipping the switch, and now he's getting into a wide action type screen or something like that. And the way that's kind of triggering things for them and just creating advantage, that play before the play, is different, man. It's creating opportunities for them to get to those pull-up threes and get downhill early in the clock. And that's where all the fun starts for them once they get that blender rolling.
And I think for me, just to build off that and kind of tying back in how everyone is kind of involved in this together, I think one portion of this that helps Devin Booker, but also helps the entire team, everyone's live in different ways. You don't necessarily know what they're going to be doing, whether it's Dylan Brooks, you know, throw ahead, he's in pick and roll now. You don't know if his cut is going to be to space or to open up a corner. You don't know if Royce O'Neal is going to the wing or going to be a screener. They all can screen for each other. They all can be involved and get the ball in action. And so I think that just allows them to go from side to side, and it makes it tough on defenses to kind of adjust to, okay, yeah, we're set up for Devin Booker. We're ready for it. But he's not necessarily bringing it up every single time, and they're starting to action with him every single time. So you have to deal with Grayson Allen, Dylan Brooks, Royce O'Neal, everyone being confident in attacking. You know, obviously, they'll even invert for Oso. But now Devin Booker gets it on the second side, and now we have to deal with him in a different fashion. And we have cuts from the corners, cuts from the wings. That makes it so hard to kind of keep one eye on the Phoenix Suns, and I think that's where it gets really fun, because when you watch – them, you know, no matter what color jerseys they have on, there's always some sort of movement. There's always some sort of motion. There's always some sort of unpredictability at the start of the season. Now, I will say it will get interesting, because the one advantage that Jordan Ott has is, hey, first you teams that played us, that scout, that playbook was a little light. Now, we have some more information. So I'm intrigued to see how teams counter, what do they choose to try and say, hey, you know what, we're not going to guard that as much, and how do the Suns counter back?
I think just to quickly bounce off of that, Steve, I'll pose the question to you. Just one, and I think this is partially because we are fresh off of like the Memphis Grizzlies breakdown, and we talked a little bit about some of the spacing and off-ball stuff that they've tried to get to, and defenses have registered a level of care. I'll let you decide how high or low that level is. But I think with the cutting and off-ball movement, like, how do you kind of balance establishing that? Or like, how much is the appropriate amount of occupying defenses versus maybe potentially cluttering the floor if you're doing too much, or if those reads aren't as tidy?
I think it's timing. For one, if you're going to cut, you know, I don't know if it can be an automatic every single time, but you got to be able to see and read the defense. You know, if your man is cheating over early and you know you have a gap, go ahead and take it. And that ties into just your spacing principles. You know, are we scripting all of this out, or are we just knowing, okay, if I don't have the ball, I need space. If this action's happening, I need to get out the way. That, to me, is where there's a little bit more of a natural feel for Phoenix, to where they go from action to action to action, and they just read off of each other, as opposed to, okay, we're trying to get specifically two side things. And so, okay, if I do an action on one side, am I really looking to attack? No, I'm looking to advance the ball. Okay, and now if I get this pick and roll, am I really looking to attack? No, I'm probably trying to get it off quick. There's a difference between, okay, we're looking to attack, get downhill. Like, even sometimes I think the throw aheads are so important for Phoenix, because you throw it ahead to Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal's on the wing, you throw it back to him. It's not like he's going to sit and go right to a dribble handoff. He might attack. Same for Dylan Brooks. You know, Dylan Brooks runs the floor, has a mismatch, throw it in the post. Now we space around that. I think there's a more organic feel towards that, to where they're playing out of the flow, as opposed to, hey, it's X, Y, Z, and then it's got to be this type beat.
Got you. And I think just looking at this Phoenix roster, I think that's why this kind of early establishment of that kind of movement, that kind of screening, it feels more sustainable because of who the players are. Like, Royce has always been a smart spacer. Grayson Allen has always been a smart spacer. We talk about Colin coming off the bench. He can fill gaps. He knows how to read the game. And so within that aspect, not that they can't, it still can't be defended well. In terms of clutter, I guess I'm more excited about that being sustainable than not. But I did want to get your general thoughts on that and how to establish that and how to kind of balance that out as teams get more tape, to your point.
Can I tie it back to the Devin Booker portion? You never know when he's going to be low on the floor and setting up to come off a screen. So it's not like it's not as static at times. I'd say that much. Continue.
No, I think that's fair. And I think I should have said this at the top as we got to the Booker portion. But as of recording, averaging a career high 28.5 points per game, 56% on twos, 37% on threes. Steven, I do have a quick 3-point volume question for you about the Suns as a whole. But for Devin Booker, we'll get to that. Just want to give you the quick tease there. Nearly 90 from the line, 7 assists per game for Devin Booker. And so I guess shifting to the playmaking, first and foremost, we've all kind of hinted at not just the way he could be used and how much he can be moved around, but just in general, the amount of attention that he's going to see in ball screens. He's been blitzed on over 10% of his pick and rolls. It's one of the higher marks in the league so far. And it's something that I've been thinking about in relation to Devin Booker. It's a conversation I had briefly with Steve about Asia Wilson, obviously a very different player, different league, but just balancing the fact that this player is getting this much attention versus the responsibility that you have to make sure that this player does not get this much attention, that type beat. Do you have any level of concern about Devin Booker getting too on the ball to the degree that he has so far this year?
Not as much as I did coming into the season. And it's because they have been very intentional about giving him outlets when he is getting double teamed. So, whether it's the direct short roll, especially when Oso Iguodaro's in the lineup and he's setting those screens, whether it's them kind of suppressing some of that pressure and just using their guards to screen. It's like, okay, you want to blitz all game? What you going to do if we bring a guard up here? And what if that guard is not somebody you want in primary action that's against one of our guards? They can do so many different things. Like, Jordan Knott has that part kind of, I feel that process is at a certain point. I think it's going to improve as they get more reps and they get more different defensive personnel groupings. This stretch that's coming up, like Steve hinted at, is going to test the metal on that for sure. And I think those teams are naturally going to bring some fire to that fight too. But I worry less about it now than I did coming into the season, largely because that process of them trusting the pass and making sharp decisions out of that has been at a sustained level that has kind of brought me some solace. Royce O'Neal doesn't get nearly enough attention. I do what I can for my little bitty part that I play in telling the story. That man, anytime there's somebody getting two to the ball, he's flashing somewhere to make that next decision. And he's gotten a lot of assists just off of the attention that their primary guys get. And he's making the right decision. And the right decision is just a quick one. He's either taking it, pulling it, taking it, getting downhill, getting a paint touch and flattening them out and then spraying from there. Getting to his floater edge, he's hitting at a, I don't know if it's a sustainable rate, but he's making it, so it's working, and everything's all fun right now. But he's just in such a good space, and akin to that, Dylan Brooks has also been in that position a lot as well, where he's just flashing, he's getting doubled off of, and he's making quick decisions and making the right ones because of it. I think that layer of it and them being able to play off of that spray pass, go spray roll, spray kick, spray drive, and you just take it and do it yourself, I think it's been very sharp, and I think it's allowing for them to play fast in the half court, and then being able to kind of play fast and keep teams rotating so early in the clock to where they have to do it for 16, 17 seconds and you're playing catch up. Multiply that across however many possessions they play over the course of a game, there's wear down effect that comes from that. And that's where to the 3-point shooting volume and all of that kind of comes into it, because that shot quality for some teams, it goes down over the course of games. It feels like it goes up incrementally for the Suns because of that wear down effect.
I think to tie that all together, when we think about Devin Booker, he's just been so decisive. And I think his vision of the floor and seeing help has improved. He knows where a pass is and he gets it there, as Steven said. But this also ties into moving him around the board. So it's not just pick and roll, two on the ball, I make this read. It's, okay, I don't need a screen, I'm a drive. Let's see if you help. Let's clear and see if I could test the nail help. If someone's going to be at that free throw line, aware of my drive, okay, I can make that quick pass real quick. If I post up, let me see what kind of help we're getting. If I'm at the block and I go up and I zipper, okay, am I looking to attack? Do we have a flare? I see where your help is. You're not supposed to be here. I'm getting the ball where you're supposed to be. Right. Those type of plays where Devin Booker is able to read the floor, make it right away. And there's, I think it ties to the overall comfort with the spacing, with the personnel, with everyone kind of having an understanding. If we give it up, we're going to get it back. I think Devin Booker has really set the tone for them on that end.
No, I love that, and that's part of why, you know, mentioned at the top, they're top 10 in both offense and defense. The Suns having a top 10 half-court offense right now as they're implementing all this stuff and empowering the amount of players that they have so far. It's really been incredible. And I guess just to quickly bounce off of that and get into the three-point point, I don't want to hang there too long. This has been a bump up in three-point volume, particularly above the break. I think that also speaks to the level of freedom. Like, hey, if you're here, or if Devin Booker is being trapped 40 feet from the basket and Royce, you get that ball in the short roll, you have license to fire. And I think that part is cool. What's been interesting to me beyond the actual three-point volume and the shooting that you've gotten from Royce and Grayson Allen in particular, the fact that they have been able to get that kind of shooting volume and also crush teams on the offensive glass to the degree that they have, that's the part where it has impressed me, but I'm also a little bit scared, because that also does tie into a little bit of the transition defense for me. And so just how have you kind of felt about that balance so far, how they're balancing the shot profile of it all, the possession winning of it all, and how they're looking to set up their shell and set up their pressure that they want to get to defensively?
Yeah, I think they're paying close attention to where a lot of their shots are coming from because of the trusting of the pass from that tone set from Devin, and them understanding that some of those shots might come from the corner, some of it might come from above the break. A large brunt of it is coming from above the break right now, and understanding where those misses tend to go. And I think that kind of plays into some of the game process for them. The tagging up for offensive rebounds to also help their transition defense. Guys aren't really leaking ahead when they're sharp with the tags, because everybody's getting a touch on somebody, or they're just outright bullying them underneath the basket. Mm-hmm. Hard to get in transition if you're starting and three or four of your guys have a foot in the paint, and the Suns have the leverage to get the other way if they don't outright come away with that offensive rebound. So you talk about wear down effect. It's not that they're doing this in pockets. They're doing this unrelentingly across multiple lineups. It's hard for guys to try to find ways to, you know, get those hit ahead passes and things like that when their execution level within that is sharp. Now, we've seen moments where a guy takes a shot and he's hitting the love and basketball pose and holding the release a little too long, and this guy kind of leaks behind him after he contests it. And a lot of times, immediately, Jordan Ott is already walking out on the court as the layup is happening. Like, yeah, we're not doing that. That's not happening this season. We got to nip this in the bud now. So it's been tried and true, and I think they've been very disciplined in the execution of that over this recent stretch of games. And I think they've had their bases covered in understanding some of their process on offense and how they cannot allow for that to hurt or impact their transition defense. And to that point, with them being able to play into their pressure kind of systematically, one thing leading to the next, which leads to the next. Again, that wear down effect is something that just consistently, it just persists for them over the course of 48 minutes.
I like it. Just to quickly tie that in together, the Suns right now, 6th in three-point rate and 5th league-wide in terms of the percentage of shots coming on above the break threes. They are 29th in transition defense in terms of the points per possession allowed. You certainly don't want that. But to Steven's point about tagging up, making sure that we're getting hits on someone, teams aren't able to run as much against the Phoenix Suns as of recording, 6th in transition frequency allowed, 6th lowest mark in the league. So they are finding that balance right now. Okay, before we officially shift to the defense, because I am very excited to talk about this Phoenix Suns defense, we've already talked a little bit about Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal and Dylan Brooks, but it's worth saying, career high 18.5 points per game for Grayson Allen right now, over 4 assists, which would also be a career high. He's shooting 45% from 3 on nearly 9 attempts. Dylan Brooks has missed time, so only 7 games for him so far, but averaging a career high 20 points per game, 55% on twos, the 3-point percentage is creeping up to 33% now after a slow start. He's doing a little bit of everything. We've talked about Royce O'Neal, career high 12.2 points per game right now. 45% from 3 on nearly 8 attempts, 5.5 boards, over 3 assists per game. We talked about his short roll decision-making and things. Steven, I'll pose this to you first. Of those three, which has surprised you the most in the early goings of the season?
Mr. Grayson Allen, man. If you told me he was going to be driving and driving and driving and driving, initiating offense and driving, secondary playmaker and driving, I don't know if I would have thought it was going to be to this extent. That speaks to the overarching point made in the first couple of minutes of them being given the freedom to just play. Mm-hmm. Grayson is a player that, like we've talked about, is a plus 3-point shooter. It comes with a certain urgency when it comes to teams wanting to not concede catch and shoot threes to him. Him being this comfortable putting the ball on the deck is allowing for him to keep advantages. And to that point, this kind of ties in with Royce as well, but number one and number two in the league this season. Royce O'Neal, number one in closeouts that he's been able to attack. Number two is Grayson Allen. And they've been one and two for pretty much the majority of this season so far. I think that largely stems from the system, and it speaks to everything that Jordan Knott has established principle-wise, but it also is a nod to Devin Booker and how he's controlling things off of the attention that he's generating or that he's seeing and generating offense from that with his passes. But Grayson is living in the paint. They're getting early shot clock paint touches, sometimes with like 19, 20 seconds on the clock. And again, teams having to play keep up from there and them keeping them in closeouts and making the right decisions and ultimately getting it back after respacing. It's been fun to see when they get that blender rolling. And Grayson's been a direct beneficiary of the system, but also his skill development. Him initiating this much offense with Jalen Green just not being around for majority of the season so far has been a major bump for them. Mm-hmm. It's allowed for Devin Booker to be a screener. It's allowed for him to get off the ball. It's allowed for him to kind of get into that traditional movement shooter and movement dynamic touch type of guy, which is obviously shouldering or lessening the shouldering of all of the attention he gets. But to Steve's point as well, early on, allow for you to use him uniquely. He's never in the same spot, and it's because players like Grayson can initiate even against pressure. And I don't know if scout reports are going to catch up or if it's just hard to do because you have to get attention on Devin. Grayson's going to get left. And when he gets left, he's making very good decisions. We've seen this man make skip passes to the corner and pick and roll, turn the corner with the left hand. And it's an accurate pass that someone's able to make a quick decision off of, whether the result is a catch and shoot three or keeping that advantage with a closeout attack. And then the other big thing for me with Grayson as well, defensively, he has been very, very good this season. His help decisions have been amazing. I watched that man do a kickout switch with Colin Gillespie against the Mavericks on Monday night. And I was like, hey, man, you making low man reads and you're early and you're blocking shots and getting deflections, getting these kickout switches. If you're this viable within all of that, that's something that they can really build around once Jalen Green is, knock on wood, healthy, because that puts him in a position to do all of those things even more sustainably.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nah, Steven nailed all the Grayson Allen points I wanted to talk about. So I'll quickly pivot to Royce O'Neal, reminding everyone, hey, you remember Utah, right? Like, I did a lot of stuff there. And like,
sure did.
This sure fits what I did there. I can just defend and also dribble a little bit, make some shots. Yeah, this is good for me. I'm happy here. Now, we've taken 2 out of 3, Nikias. Uh-huh. I have a question for you. Sure. Because earlier, not sure if I heard you mention the name Dylan Brooks too many times. Would he be the biggest surprise? What have you thought about Dylan Brooks this season so far for the Phoenix Suns, Nikias?
You know, Steve, I'm going to answer your question. But first, just quickly on the Grayson Allen point, to the drive point that Steven just made, 10 drives for 100 possessions last year, up to about 16 this year. So I wanted to sprinkle that in. Now, to the Dylan Brooks point.
Bro took my lob smooth and decided, nah, let me get my stat in real quick. Boy, if you don't answer the question.
I am going to do that right now. But no, in all seriousness, I have very much been impressed with the play of Dylan Brooks so far. Again, the only quibble that I even have with Dylan to this point, aside from we want to see him play more, it's been 7 games so far. The only quibble I have with him has just been the 3-point shooting. He's gotten good looks. He hasn't knocked him down to a high clip yet, but that's coming up. Other than that, like the supplementary scoring that he's provided when the Suns have had to work late in these possessions. Like, yeah, I'll just take all these middies and knock these down. No problem.
Good about the mid-range shots from Dylan Brooks?
Well, they're going in right now, so yes. But got him! But no, in all seriousness, I do think he has been a very important release valve for the Suns in their half-court offense. Steven mentioned a little bit earlier, like some of the screening and some of the release valve stuff he's done when screening for Devin Booker. So that's very much been important, the random cuts that he's been able to sprinkle in. He and feels like every other guard or wing in this Phoenix Suns team the random offensive rebound you don't expect from Dylan Brooks. He'll keep you with those corner crashes as well. And even going back to the beginning of the conversation, the kind of culture, the kind of physicality, the kind of activity that you want to establish with this group, Dylan Brooks has been at the forefront of that. Shoot, we look at the game from last night. How many skirmishes did we see in Suns Pacers last night? A whole lot of them. Like, they're not going to get punked. It does not matter. I think Dylan Brooks has been a very important culture piece. Stop me if you've heard this before with Dylan Brooks and that toughness and that aggression kind of permeating throughout a locker room and ultimately transferring on the court. That's been very important. And to the defense, it has been incredibly good when he's been on the floor this year. And so this has been a strong two-way start for Dylan Brooks. Is the 20 points per game sustainable? Like, probably not. I would imagine the two-point efficiency goes down, the three-point efficiency goes up. But he's been very important for them. Like, I think he deserves his props.
There we go. I'm glad I accomplished one of the two things I set out to do very quickly. Salute to Colin Gillespie. Yeah. Really have enjoyed the Colin Gillespie season. I really appreciate him downloading some of the TJ McConnell package. The fadeaway 8-foot shots are incredible, but he's also making threes. So just want to salute him real quick. But yeah, thank you,
Steve, Cass. Question for you.
What's up?
Did you mention TJ McConnell because of the University of Arizona tie that you have, or was it an earnest TJ McConnell
reference? It was an earnest reference because he's okay. Kind of taking some of those short jump shots. But to the University of Arizona, yuck. And speaking of yuck, I will also feel sick if you don't stick around with us after this break. We're going to talk Phoenix Suns defense. Stay tuned.
And we are back with this Suns discussion. Steve, thank you for tossing us the break in the way that you do. We see you, Vic Dog. Tremendous transitions. Let's talk about this Phoenix Suns defense. As of recording, 9th in defensive rating per clean the glass. They are 8th in half-court defense. And as I sprinkled in a little earlier, they are top 10 half-court offense. So as of right now, there are 3 teams in the NBA with a top 10 half-court offense and a half-court defense. Top 10 half-court defense. It's the Oklahoma City Thunder. That shouldn't surprise you. It's the Miami Heat. Might surprise you a little bit, but we've talked about what the Heat have done offensively this year, and the defense remains strong. And these Phoenix Suns, currently in the top 10 in both right now. So, Steven, I'll start with you. What has impressed you the most about this Phoenix Suns defense?
It's honestly a little twofold for me. The front end of it for me is the pressure. Mm-hmm. And that continuing to set tones for them every single possession. Live miss, tag up. Because of the tag up, the person that's bringing the ball to the floor is being pressured at times. If they're scoring, Colin Gillespie, Ryan Dunn, they're playing chess immediately. Not necessarily going for the steal, but steering the wheel of the defensive possession. And teams are getting into the clock super late. 16, 17 seconds, and you're getting to your first action with 15, 14. Mm-hmm. That's leading to late shot clock attempts, and that's right in their wheelhouse. I have more on the pressure part, but the other half of that for me, in tandem with it, the switching. Mark Williams, can you guard in space? Answer has been yes so far this season, and it goes first game. Like, yeah, I know we're trying to get you into this slowly but surely. How about you go ahead and switch against Malik Monk? How about you go ahead and switch against Zach LaVine? Russell Westbrook, you can switch that too. Let's see what you do in space, and we'll crowd the gaps around you. Just be solid, get up a good contest, don't foul, job done. They've been very, very good with kind of blending together all of the depths of pressure that they want into their game script. And again, that wear down effect, it feels like they have teams right where they want them on the defensive end because of the kind of the buildup to the moment, and then they seize it. And the last handful of games, they've been getting the activity with it, forcing turnovers and getting points off of those turnovers. Flirting around 20 a game over the last 3 or 4 games with that as well. So it's the pressure leading to the switching, and then the switching and the activity with that all kind of working in unison for me. What's kind of stood out to you guys on that front, though?
Steve, I won't hang it too long. It's the activity for me. You need to be, in today's NBA, a decisive and organized unit. And there's, you know, they're not a perfect defense, but when you watch them, you can see their jerseys move. You can see the rotations. You can see the activity. You can see middle pick and roll. We're going to force it to one side. Okay, the weak side comes in. We're in our spots where we need to be. The little things that make a defense be able to be flexible throughout a regular season and go against different matchups, that's important to me. So if you have that base, especially early in the regular season, you can kind of grow on that. So I thought they'd be annoying. I thought the defensive culture would be important. It's very interesting to see them grow throughout it, though, because the start was not fun. Like, they've done a lot of good things at home. Road hasn't been so great for Phoenix, and they gave up, what, 129 to the Clippers, 133 to Denver, 138 to Utah, and 114 to Memphis. And to be able to bounce back into be able to have Nekias say that type of stat where they are defensively is a credit to the buy-in. Because sometimes you can let go of the rope if early on this is what we want to do defensively. The defense is important to us. This is how we're executing. Well, hey, this isn't working, man. Why are we doing this? They didn't have that. So you kind of see a team that gets after it on that end and believes. And so the stretch is going to test them, but the activity, that's something they can build on and rely on all night.
Yeah, I think we are aligned in just the overall activity and the aggression that the Suns defense has shown so far. It's certainly been my favorite part. I made the reference earlier, turn on their first preseason game, and it's Ryan Dunn just in the backcourt. As soon as probably somebody inbounds, here he is. I was like, oh, so they're trying to do this, huh? This is going to be interesting. Let's see if it sustains. So far, it has. And just to give some quick numbers on the Phoenix Suns defense so far, as Steven mentioned, the early pickup points a little bit earlier, they are picking up an opposing ball handler in the backcourt on nearly 26% of their possessions. That is the fifth highest mark in the NBA so far. They were around 10% last year. They have more than doubled those rate of possessions from last season, just speaking to the culture shift and the schematic shift on that front. And as you mentioned, like how long it's taking for teams to get into their action. Overall, they're 26th in terms of average possession length defensively. They are forcing teams into longer possessions, which speaks to the pressure that they're putting on early, et cetera. And even when it comes to, okay, when is our first action happening? 6.2 seconds is what it's taking. So actually, as Steve mentioned, like the 17-second mark, like, yeah, around there. That is the third lowest mark or highest mark in the league. We talked about the Portland Trailblazers not too long ago, their first. The Indiana Pacers still forcing teams to get into their offense a little bit later. Now, what happens after that is another story. We're not going to talk about the Pacers. They've been very injured, all the things. But they, at the very least, have kept that portion of the program up. So, wanted to salute you on that front. And I think just to kind of dig more into the half-court defense, but the switching and the cross-matching in particular, because you mentioned the name of Mark Williams. Steve and I have had talks about Mark Williams throughout the history of this podcast, where I've been intrigued, and I was like, what in blazes is this defense? This isn't going to work if you're going to defend like this with all this size, big dog, etc. And so now you get to the Phoenix era, healthy, and he is being tasked with switching more often. He is, you know, pulling to, want to go back in dunker spot lore, when we talked about the Boston Celtics, here's Robert Williams on a wing. Well, let's put Mark Williams on Harrison Barnes. And let's see if you can muck things up. And if you have to switch, then that's cool too. The fact that he hasn't been perfect, but the fact that he has held up to this degree has been one of my biggest surprises of the season so far. And so if you can get that kind of versatility with Mark Williams, then it is certainly easier to get that from your Dylan Brookses and your Royce O'Neals, et cetera, to be able to tap into that type of versatility. Have you been surprised with how often Phoenix has looked to switch and cross match to that degree, Stephen?
Cross-matching, no. I felt like that was going to be something they could lean into maybe more than people thought, just because you have Ryan Dunn, you got Dylan Brooks, you got Royce O'Neal, Nigel Hayes-Davis. These are all kind of plus-size wings that can guard up and that can kind of be sturdy with their post-defense. And if you can kind of allow for Mark to be a roamer in a sense because of that, what does that do to teams in terms of their approach? If we're talking about all of this pressure and then you got to deal with cross-matching, you get into a pick and roll with 16 seconds on the clock, switch, cool. That guy rolls to the basket. If you need to, Mark Williams is roaming around there. Again, nothing solved, and the clock is just tick, 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 tick. Now it's Jaws, and you got to take a shot late in the shot clock. It's probably a contested shot, or if they're getting a steal and they're off to the races. So I'm not surprised by the cross-matching part. The switching part with Mark Williams in particular, I am. And I brought this up after the game against the Mavericks on our post-game show. And I was like, so Steve Clifford, advisor for Jordan Knott, with this Suns team. Steve mm-hmm. Clifford, Coach Mark Williams, similar constructs in terms of approach. Now, the personnel, can't really compare the two. I think that probably led to some of the inconsistencies we saw, or him just not being as sharp mentally because of the ecosystem he was operating in with the Suns. Starting with the head coach, some of the players and the intensity they play with, he understands that there's a standard. And him being better because of the pieces around him doesn't surprise me, but him holding up this well, being disciplined, sliding his feet, closing off, cutting off drives at times, I've been very impressed by that. And I was surprised that Jordan Knott leaned into it so early in the season. I know everybody's been talking about me, asking him about switching after the first game against the Kings. It's because there was an element of surprise. I'm like, is that Mark Williams? He didn't start this possession guarding either one of these Kings guards, and he's doing a good job getting up a contest. And a lot of times when he's switching, I think the trickle-down effect of it, if he's contesting and they're able to get that board, now you got a mismatch directly in transition, and that gives you something to play off of. Devin Booker drives the post because he has the guy kind of on the top side trying to stop him from posting up. And it's just everything just kind of piece by piece playing into one another.
I think the overall mindset is just to have a level of versatility within the team so that we can kind of adjust on the fly if we need to and be able to defend different teams, defend different matchups, and not have to rely on, okay, if we need activity, it has to be this big. If we need, no, we kind of have our base. We can mess around and make you poke at different things. So I think it gets interesting to see how do teams counter it. You know, do they continue to just keep him involved in pick and roll if it's where he's guarding a wing? Do they lift him up higher on the floor so that they can get to other actions and open up roles and low man's not as big and see if we can get you there? The rotations have been there on the drives. Can the Suns keep the ball in front consistently? Is dribble penetration something that's going to be an issue for them where teams are able to drive, kick, get the second drive, and now we've got you in rotation in that way? So it's one of those things where, like, I love the base. I love the activity. Who's going to try and find something that's like, hey, you know what? Let's make y'all do this. Because I think that's where it gets interesting. And I mean, we talked about the schedule, but this is where, okay, let's test your bigs. Let's see how many lineups you want to go to. Let's see what happens if, you know, Dylan Brooks is in foul trouble or Grayson Allen's in foul trouble. See if you have to go somewhere else. What do you want to play Ryan Dunn X amount of minutes? Like, there's things you can poke at. But overall, for them, I think the name of the game is having a level of versatility to be able to, this is what we do, and we're dictating terms as much as we can, or at least anticipating what you want to do.
I think just to hang there a bit there, Steve, because you're talking about the level of versatility that they want to establish and teams looking to test them out and test some of the rotations in particular. This has been another thing that's popped on film for me, and I think it got loud for the national consciousness when the Suns beat the Spurs not too long ago. This is a team that will double you and double you and double you and double you if they feel like this is something that we just don't want you to get going, or you may not be the quickest processor, so let's be aggressive and proactive in our approach. Let's double you because we think you're going to mess up, that type of beat. How have you felt about the level, or I guess the volume of double teams that we've seen from Phoenix's defense so far, Steve?
Yeah, it's been interesting to see. I was very curious about how they would approach some of these kind of post players. Because I imagined if you're cross-matching, naturally somebody's going to try to poke at that cross-match when you got someone that can kind of survive in the post and either be a trigger for ball movement or just outright go and score. So early this season, I feel like it's been the majority of those kind of flood rotations from the baseline where somebody's just kind of hanging around, the low man's hanging around the basket, ultimately goes to overload that strong side block, and they kind of play out of that. The rotations out of that have not been the best at times. And we've seen them get dinged a little bit with that person helping the helper there and being kind of caught in limbo if someone cuts or if someone kind of flashes to the middle off of that. Teams are getting offense from there, so they got to clean that part up. But I think the general part in putting a hit on a guy and getting that ball out of their hands has been solid. I would like to see them experiment with doubling from other angles. And I know it's still in the early portion of the season, so a small sample size. But I think there's some fruit that they can get from the defense and kind of throwing some curveballs and kind of sending doubles from different spots on the floor.
Okay. I like that. Steve, how have you felt about it so far?
Well, I think it's just a team that wants to anticipate more than they react. And so the difference with double teams is if we're committed to the double and everyone knows where they're supposed to go after the initial double, it's a lot easier to continue to double and stay true to it and live with the result because, hey, we just don't want this to happen. if you have an issue where, okay, the double is poorly timed, the rotations aren't locked in, it becomes less comfortable to stick with that double. And so I think that kind of speaks to just the mindset of the defense to be locked in, to understand, okay, this is what we're doing. Everyone react to it, and we'll get back, we'll recover, and we'll make it tough on you. And so those are the kind of little things that can help you survive some of these matchups they're going to face, because they can throw some different attention at different people in different ways, and we may see some curveballs. But we have the base that allows us that comfort, so where we're making the rotations we want to make, as opposed to reacting and we're in rotation trying to catch back up.
Okay. Oh, I think that makes a ton of sense. Just quickly, on the double team front, they have doubled nearly 24% of the post-ups that they've seen so far. That is the second highest rate in the NBA, behind another team that decided we're going to double Wimby a bunch, in particular the Brooklyn Nets. And so they're certainly... Huh? Yeah. Steve, the Brooklyn Nets have been an aggressive defense in the half court.
Have they been a top 10 defense in the half court?
Top 10 in the state of New York.
Well done.
We did it. Quick award free throw I'll toss your way, Steven, and then I'll toss it to you as well, Steve. How many all defense candidates does the Sun team have right now?
Oh, that one's way outside the box.
Let's go.
I err on maybe one. And that would probably be, I guess you have to tie in the games played part for Mark Williams, but he would be it for me, just because that team is night and day when he's on the court defensively. And I think some of that is the depth behind him that kind of adds to that. But when he's on the court, their defense is hitting a little differently. And for me, probably would be him. And he's playing more games than Dylan Brooks, so it would probably be him for me. I'm curious where Steve's mind is on that one.
If Phoenix is able to continue to succeed and the defense holds up, it is 1,000% going to be Dylan Brooks.
Yeah.
We can be honest with each other here, right? We don't have to lie.
Yeah, like that's just, he already has the baked in like consciousness of this is what he does type beat. To your point, Steven, pulling up the on-off stuff very quickly. A 120.8 defensive rating when Mark Williams is not on the floor. That drops to 107.1 when he is on the floor. His overall just plus minus stuff is absurd in the early goings of the season. So we'll see if that holds. But that's pretty loud for Mark Williams to start the year. I think for me, funny enough, it's probably Dylan for me as well, if it's going to be a Suns run. Because again, it's seven games, so that's going to ding him for now. But if he does stay relatively healthy and he qualifies, like, he has just been kind of monstrous on the ball. Like, him and Royce have both been part of that cross-matching, will defend bigger guys. But, like, Dylan being able to do that, and also, hey, here's a star guard, I will take this on too if I need to, I think he's going to have that in his bag. And the fact that he, again, early on, the fact that he actually has stocks on top of this year, in addition to what we've normally seen from Dylan Brooks, is this is just really strong on-ball defense, and it may be like a steal a game. It may be 0.8 or something like that, to where if you're not locked into Grizzlies, Rockets, whatever, well, he's only averaging this. Is he really playing better than insert person with more steals? He has the loud box score thing too. So I think it's probably Dylan Brooks if we get one. Just a couple of quick – oh, go ahead, Steve.
No, I didn't have anything. I was just making sure we were good. No.
Okay. Well, then rapid fire on some of the young guys for you, Steven, before we get you out of here. We haven't gotten to see much of Jalen Green so far. He made the debut, dropped 29. It's another hamstring injury. He's going to be out for a little bit. Just from the debut, what did you see, and what do you kind of project for his fit with the Suns group when he does regain health?
Yeah, it's twofold with Devin Booker. Steve emphasized the off-the-ball second side Devin Booker. What about when Jalen Green's in the lineup? If Devin's on the ball, guess who's second side? Mm-hmm. If Jalen's on the ball, guess who's second side? That's a lot to deal with. We saw it on the first possession of his time with the Suns when he was in the lineup. I think they get into a pick and roll with Devin on the strong side with I think it was with Royce O'Neal. And one pass away is Jalen Green. It kicks to him. It's an immediate step-up screen, and he's able to get downhill. Ends up hitting the short roll, and I think they end up getting up points on the offensive rebound from there. But you can kind of see the process playing out for them. have him second side, have him on the ball. That means there's kind of Jekyll and Hyde with him and Devin happening, as well as the other guys like we've spoken to. And it's just another guy that benefits from all of the principles they're playing off of in the half court on offense. I think Jalen is probably going to have his most fun this season because he's going to feel and see so much more space in comparison to what he saw prior. And Yeah, exactly. We saw him answering, shout out to Kellen Olsen, answering his question after his first game about, has he ever felt this much space in any situation he was in before? And he just laughed it off and said, next question. But that next question was the answer itself. Mm-hmm. The answer was absolutely yes. I've never seen anything like this before. So I imagine he's going to have some more scoring pyrotechnics up his sleeve once he gets back healthy. Probably sometime closer to the new year for me, but I think he's going to have a large runway with this team, and it's largely because the space, and he's going to be able to just kind of see one-on-one opportunities.
Just to add on for Jalen Green, I think it's just the tempo that the Suns play with, the spacing, as Steven said, and this allows him to showcase what he grew with in Houston, knowing he can kind of have more opportunity and more runway to attack. So it's not necessarily, okay, did I get this shot in the last 3 minutes? When's the next time I'm going to touch it? We're late in the clock. I have to do something. I have to make a play and pick and roll. There's plays to be made. And I think, obviously, the scoring was great. The drives were good. The mindset was good when he did play that one game. The one play I liked is when he was in pick and roll. And he attacked towards the right wing-ish, middle-ish. And Phoenix did the thing. Devin Booker slid down, corner cut to the other side. And he just threw it right away. And I was like, oh. You're making reads. You get it. Okay. I understand that. So it's kind of like a good balance of I have opportunity. I can now not just do what I do scoring-wise. I can buy into the system a little bit.
I like it. A quick free throw for you, Steve, and then I'll get to Steven. Between Ryan Dunn and Oso Iguodaro, whose minutes have you enjoyed the most so far this year?
Give me the defense. Give me the inverted pick and roll. Give me the drives. Give me all that. No offense to Ryan Dunn. But, yeah, it's Oso for me. He's got just some stuff, and I always like a player with different stuff on both ends of the floor.
I love that answer. Steven, what say you?
I've had high expectations for Ryan Dunn this season. I think recently, this last week, they made a lineup shift, and honestly, it happened when Jalen came around. They kept Grayson in the starting lineup, and they moved Ryan off the bench just to kind of have him as a spark plug with that unit. So he's kind of risen to that level that I've expected recently. Mm-hmm. I would probably say Oso for me as well, just because I find and see value in a big that can do all of those connective things while also being able to connect things for you in a defensive end with his switching and his activity. We saw it last night was the loudest example this season so far. I think he had like 3 steals and 2 blocks or some iteration of 5 stocks together. And he was all over the place, dunking the ball, short roll reads, everything was there. So I like what they're doing with him. I think they can get more out of him on the offensive end, and I imagine they get there in time. But, mm-hmm. I like what Oso has done, even though it's come with some things that have left Suns fans wanting more from him, which we'll see in time. But he's been solid so far.
Okay. It sounds like it's going to be a clean sweep for Oso. I would just quickly say to the Ryan Dunn portion, I've liked the defense. We've talked about the pressure so far. The offensive rebounding from Ryan Dunn. Oof. He just bullies people. And it's one of my favorite random things during Suns games. It's just like, oh, he has mm-hmm. this in him. Like, he is fully using the frame. And, like, it's one of those things I go back to, like, the rookie year. And, like, there was super early intrigue for me with Ryan Dunn and his drives. And then that quickly went away with some of the efficiency stuff. I'm just like, okay, I do like the fact that he can just kind of take people with him on these drives. So, like, seeing him kind of access that as an offensive rebounder, to your point, coming off the bench now as kind of that energy, that spark that could just muck things up for you on both ends. Like, I like that for him. So my pick is also Oso, but I did want to shout out Ryan Dunn doing some fun things. Last real general question.
On the Ryan front, I think he has the – continue to operate with that 0.5 decision-making mindset. Mm-hmm. Teams are cross-matching him. We saw it on that first road trip in Denver and with the Clippers and a little bit with Utah as well. That unlocks him as a screener. I think that's unique. Suns fans saw a lot of that with Mikal Bridges as he ascended. I think Ryan has some of that screen under, stay under, short roll read, floater or a lob pass or corner skip. He has that in his bag. If he stays in that space and operates well, there's a lot of opportunity for him downhill, and he's more athletic than Mikal, so he can just go and raise on guys too. Mm-hmm. And the audacity. Victor Wembanyama, I see you, yes, and I raise you a tomahawk. I'm going to try this. I might not be successful. I might feel it the next day, but I'm going for this. And that some of that emanates from the tone that Dylan Brooks sets. That's a form of leadership for the people that want to have that conversation. Might not always look the way you want it to, but he's doing things that infuses confidence in these guys. And you see it play out in so many different ways. So, yeah, I've appreciated the audacity of Ryan Dunn this season getting downhill a ton. Some of that with the offensive rebounding, some of it just trying to put guys under and in the basket.
Okay, that just unlocked the quick free throw for free before I get to my last official question. So have we figured out, you are actually covering this team, so I may have just missed it. Have we figured out who's Villain Jr. or Little Villain or who's the actual guy?
Yeah, so I want to have y'all guess before I give you the answer. So that's my free throw for your free throw. Who do you think it is?
Oh, Jordan Goodwin.
Okay.
Ah, man. What an upset, Steve saying Jordan Goodwin's name on this podcast before I did. That's crazy. I love Jordan Goodwin. But anyway, I'm going to guess Ryan Dunn.
So Ryan was my initial guess. I was wrong. I asked Dylan. He was like, nah. Colin Gillespie.
Makes sense.
Okay.
That's a name I wanted to speak about, because the season he's having has been it's been quite ridiculous off the bench. I think he's still leading the league in assists for reserve players, which is not by happenstance. I think he's been very good at the point of attack, whether he's initiating or getting it on the second side. Their double drag action, some of the things they like to run with Devin Booker, he's been very good in pick and roll with those as well. He's making sharp decisions. Defensively, though, that's what stands out most for me. I think he's sixth in terms of instances picking up guys in the backcourt. Him and Ryan Dunn are both top five. Ryan Dunn is number three right now. Collin's number six. Their own team is underneath a point per possession when Colin Gillespie's picking up guys on that other side of the other side of half court. So he's doing good, just, again, not always overexerting, going for steals, just controlling possession, shrinking that shot clock, and that playing in turn to everything else they want to do. He's been really good on that end. And the other thing for me, the catch and shoot threes. A little over three a game, 52.2% for him. He is knocking those down, and he is not hesitating at all. And it's coming with all of that kind of Villain Jr. dynamic that you would imagine. He's been very nasty. I think in training camp, they're doing fives, and he knocked down like two game winners. And he's talking to the guy that he made the game winner against, letting him know about it. And it's just, again, that culture setting. He's kind of – he asked for it from Dylan Brooks, which he mentioned to us. He said he came to him and said he wanted to learn those ways and kind of make it a part of his game. And he's worn those qualities extremely well this season so far.
Okay. Shout out to Colin then. Wrong for the guess, but I do like the shout and good stuff for what he's been able to do on both ends of the floor so far this year. Last official question that I have. Mm-hmm. What is the best lineup for the Phoenix Suns, in your opinion, Steven?
So, for this small sample size, for me, I would say Booker, Green, Grayson, Dylan, and Mark Williams. I think that's the lineup that gets them the bit of versatility they want on the other end. It keeps the floor spacing optimized on the offensive end and transition. It helps them play to what they want to do. Mm-hmm. I think the catch and shoot stuff that they want to get to, that lineup optimizes a lot of that. Primary side, second side, you kind of have things kind of leveled out from there as well. They haven't gotten to the goods with Mark Williams as a vertical spacer yet. I imagine they get there in time, but I think that lineup is what can kind of optimize it all. And if Grayson Allen continues to handle the ball this well at points of attack or just outright initiating, and you got Devin and Jalen starting in corners, mm-hmm. you can get into a lot with that. So I think that's the lineup for me at this present moment.
Okay. Steve, what say you?
Give me Booker, Allen, Brooks, O'Neal, Mark Williams.
I love it.
Okay. I like it. Steve, we have the same lineup, so there you go. A little bit of brand synergy. You love to see it. And unfortunately, I lied. I do have one more question for Steven. Where can the people follow you? Where can the people find your work?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at StevenPG3, Steven with a PH. Always talking basketball, league-wide, specific to Phoenix as well, obviously covering the Suns and the Mercury. If you want to talk basketball, you want to kind of share thoughts with me, feel free. I'm always down to talk basketball. Doing a lot of film sessions and things like that on YouTube as well over on our PHNX Sports tab over there. So you can go check out a lot of the film sessions I'm doing on both of those teams as well. And then the other thing for me as well, you can let's continue to clean up the conversation that's being had around this game. There's too much great stuff going on, too much good stuff going on to not dwell into that other side. Find something positive. Follow the right people. I think you can learn a lot from what's going on. We got more people popping up doing the things that we like to see more of. So let's continue to lean into that and be better about this game. It's precious, and it's in a very good space right now.
I love it. I love it. There, Steven, we appreciate you as always. Not just a friend of the show, but a friend in general. We appreciate you. Follow his work. Support his work. Let's have more fun talking about basketball. We appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate both of y'all. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Steven. And speaking of fun, we're going to have some fun after this break when we talk about Nikola Jokic.
And we are back. And I think we should talk a little bit more about Nikola Jokic. We talked about the Nuggets earlier this week, and naturally we talk about Jokic within that, but also Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon and the second unit and the changes to the defense, yada, yada, yada. Since the recording of the podcast, which happened on Tuesday morning, Nikola Jokic drops 35, 15, and 7 against the Kings and barely misses shots. And then he follows that up with 55, 12, and 6 against the Los Angeles Clippers. Like I said it on the pod, I'll say it again. I feel like he is strengthening his claim as the best player in the league. But the question I'll toss to you, Steve, I wanted to hit you with a general how do you even deal with Nikola Jokic, but I'll ask a more pointed question. Can you even double-team Nikola Jokic if you want to?
I think that gets really interesting, especially considering some of the quotes from Ty Lue post-game where he was like, hey, yeah, we wanted to make Nikola Jokic score. Didn't think he'd get 55. And so for him, 55 points on 23 shots, only missed five. I mean, the first quarter was absurd. We scored 25. Him kind of just leaning into the scoring is a little bit dynamic considering last year it felt like, hey, is he gonna put his head down and understand that he needs to score? There's no doubt this year. And I think it ties into one, you know, I think he, you know, that he was asked, he talked about how much he loves the second unit and a bunch of veterans who want to get after it. There's a comfort level with him, and Denver has always been notorious for moving him across and around the court. So you never know exactly where he's going to catch it. And he's so good at diagnosing your help defense that wherever the double's going to come from, he's seen it already and he's anticipating. So even as the Clippers decided not even to double to show help, Jokic gets, you know, they run wedge action for him, rip him into the post. He gets a catch. If you're just there lingering for 0.7 seconds, he's firing it to a shooter. And so it's so much so that you get the combination of Jokic putting his head down, looking to score, reading the defense, knocking down the casual threes, which I think should be more appreciated. And then as soon as you showcase a level of, hey, can you stop? Vroom, the ball whizzes past your head.
It's nonsensical. Just to quickly bounce off of what you said there and just the box score itself. You mentioned 35, 15, and 7. You followed it up with 55, 12, and 6. Across those two games, Steve, 28 of 34 inside the arc. You mentioned the three-point shooting, 6 of 8 on threes across those two games. And like just the nonchalance of the threes that he takes, it always pops me visually. It's just like it's almost like he just takes a deep breath, like, oh, I guess I just have to take this one then. Oh, you're way back there. How dare you? Here's a shot. Barely jumping, it just goes through the net. It's just nuts. And then 16 of 19 from the line for good measure. But to the actual, can you double him? It seems like the answer has been no, at least not to the degree that we're accustomed to with Nikola Jokic. Just quickly on that front, his overall double team rate is just down from last season. And I think tied to that is something that you mentioned about the way that they move Nikola Jokic around. I think there's been more intention around getting him touches around the middle of the floor or getting him touches in the elbow area of the floor. So far this year, like the hassle fun, like some of the second spectrum filtering and the touch data and stuff that they have, averaging around 26 touches per game around that elbow area. That's up from about 24 last year. when Jokic gets a touch in that area of the floor, it's an absurd 1.24 points per possession, which it's just nonsensical. That is elite. That is one of the best marks in the league. You filter for a certain amount of volume. He's like, he's just the best in that area. That's also up from last year. And on those touches around the elbow area, it was at 23% last year. It's down to 19% this year. Teams don't feel comfortable letting Jokic see where help is coming from. Because to your point, Steve, we can just get that sucker out of there. Or he can attack before the help even gets there. And he finishes there. And then when you get to just the middle of the floor, forget the elbows, top of the key. There are generally three different ways that the Nuggets get to these kind of touches with Nikola Jokic. You get some of the high pick and roll with him and Jamal Murray when they get to what I like to call the flat spacing alignment, which is simply a player in the left corner. So there you go.
The wings are clear.
the wings are clear. There you go. Thank you, Steve. But they get to that. Jamal Murray is able to get downhill. Pocket pass to Jokic. He can get to some of those floaters where he just does not miss any of those. Or if it's high enough and teams decide to switch it, then Jokic just stops around the free throw line area, puts the paw up, and now I'm taking you with me. You can't do anything about that. So you get the pick and roll stuff. You get the off-ball stuff, something that you've brought up in particular the last couple of years, Steve, the way that the Nuggets are comfortable running Jokic off of pin downs and different types of screening actions to get him touches in the middle of the floor. So you have that kind of fun stuff for him. And then you have your traditional half-court stuff. Well, let's just post them at the elbow. They're flowing out of horns. This is when you get into Jamal Murray setting these screens for Aaron Gordon, and he's cutting. And defenses just have not figured out what they want to do with that yet. Are we switching it all? We got to be crisp with the switch. If that guy in the corner is trying to cheat to deal with Aaron Gordon, Nikola Jokic is firing that to Cam Johnson or Tim Hardaway Jr. or whoever else. They're knocking down shots from there. Teams just have not been able to figure that out. And so you look at the middle touches. It's 11 per game. That's up from last year. It's 1.27 points per possession, which is the best in the league. And once again, you can't double them from that area. About 20% last year, down to 16% this year. It's just absurd the way that he is able to dice up defenses to this degree.
Yeah, and I think overall, with what Denver has done with some more initiation from Aaron Gordon, some more from Jamal Murray, just having different guys bring it up, it adds to the overall Jokic package, because now when he brings it up, he gets a screen from Jamal Murray. They go inverted pick and roll. Okay, where did that come from? You mentioned the elbow flashes and the middle touches. It's not just give it to him and cut around. They may run something, and now he flashes to the elbow. And you don't know if he's flashing for a handoff or if he's flashing to catch back you down and attack. You know, they may start a possession with, you know, him at the elbow, go pick and roll. Okay, he pops. It didn't work. Now he gets a screen. So it's not static right now to the point where we know exactly, okay, Jokic is going to get it in the post. We are going to double Jokic because it's this. They move him around the chessboard, and, you know, the aggression that he's had, you know, because we talk about his pick and pop game. You don't know if that pop is going to be, I'm going to shoot this three, or actually, I'm going to go ahead and hit, turn you to the side, back you down. Now I'm in the paint. Okay, where's that double supposed to come from? Because, you know, we were doing something different defensively, you know, the spacing. And when they clear out a wing for him and he catches it mid-post, okay, that's kind of like his version of lulling you to sleep with those two back downs. So, okay, hit, no one did anything? Okay, I'll go finish, you know? So it just keeps defenses off balance.
Mm-hmm. And I think just quickly bounce off of that, I want to hit on the pick and roll point. Very quickly on Nikola Jokic. Like, this is not new that he's getting the random early screens from Jamal Murray or Christian Brown or Aaron Gordon, et cetera. This is something that we've talked about before. But it is worth noting that the volume is up on those early screens. And it's been fun kind of watching him continue to just test out defenses. Let's see what you want to do. Do you want to switch? How clean is that switch? Are you trying to stay attached? How good is this navigation? I think that's where Murray and others deserve credit for them getting legitimate hits on some of these screens as well. It's not just them slipping out of there. That helps aid Jokic in creating advantages. But I think to that Clippers game, where, as you mentioned at the top, they didn't want to double team Jokic. They didn't want to put two on the ball for him. So it's just very much, all right, Mr. Zubats, or when Brook Lopez is in, okay, Mr. Lopez, how well are you navigating this screen? If you get thrown off at all, I'm just turning this into a drive and we're drawing fouls, or I can just kind of dribble into a post-up. That's neat. You get to the Kings game, it's like, all right, Mr. Eubanks, oh, y'all are trying to switch more of these in the second half. Oh, okay. I'm taking you with me with a drive. Or you know, if you're trying to stay attached, I can just dribble into a post up where, you know, we talked about earlier this week, he has been the best post scorer or best post option in the NBA. He is leading the NBA in post touches by a very wide margin as of recording, and he's been insanely efficient on them. And so, like, there just isn't a great answer. So when you can just sprinkle those in, again, pick and roll volumes up for him, but that's still such a small slice of the pie, and he kills you with those two. What do you do?
I think the drives is really where you feel it a lot more, because it's just so very much, okay, you're defending Jokic, you push this catch out, cool, all right, let's see what we got. Turn corner drive, come with me, finish. Well, I didn't expect that. I think my favorite Jokic ones are when he, you know, you defend the first action and he decides to throw it out to the perimeter and I'm going to the paint and you're coming with me and I would like a paint touch. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and get you deep in the paint. Give me the ball and let's see what happens. Or just when he gets a mismatch these days, hey, you're not in for a great time if they get the ball to him quick. And so I think the decisiveness as far as, yeah, he can lull you, but there's also some of that real quick, a bop, hit, turn, great footwork, finish. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, you want to laugh real quick?
Yeah.
Over 1.3 points per possession on any trip featuring a Jokic drive, too. Like, it's all just good. The pick and rolls, the off-screen stuff, that's over 1.3 points per possession when he gets one of those. The post-ups, the drives, the pick and rolls. And then, kind of feels like a footnote to this point, we both mentioned it already, but then the passing, like, he just sees everything. Even if you don't want to help, if you're off, if your breathing cadence changes and you can't move your arm fast enough, that ball's whizzing by you, it's going to the corner. Nikola Jokic leads the NBA in assists right now. He has 70 assists at the rim. That's normally just a guard stat. We're running pick and roll, we're tossing lobs, we're driving, attacking the defense, puncture the paint, here's a laydown pass, whatever. Your center should not be close to the top of the league in this. Not only is Nikola Jokic number one, him and Cade Cunningham, I think, are the only two players as of recording over 50. Jokic at 70, I think it's Cade at 53. It's not close. Your center being insanely efficient in all three levels as a scorer is also producing literally the most fruitful assist that you can generate on top of this. It's unrivaled offensive production from Nikola Jokic right now. It is insane. And that's where, again, we had a full, like, Nuggets, an overall Nuggets talk earlier in the week. It was also funny that I posed the question to you, Steve. Like, hey, you think Jokic is just cool, just playmaking right now, hovering around 20, 22 points, and he can just hit everybody else, and then just follows that up with 90 points in two games? He can do
this. Yeah, bucket after bucket after bucket after bucket. And then, yes, I will also pass. So I think it's hard to deny how great he's been to start and the comfort level that he's had with this team. You know, it's like almost like some pressure has been lifted off him to a degree. So now he's just playing even more. That sounds odd to say, considering how well he's played over this stretch. But, like, he just feels like he likes everything that's going on in Denver.
Yeah. Like, I think he mentioned it, last year, that I feel like I'm playing the best basketball of my life. And now he's leveled up, potentially. Like, I don't know what you do with Nikola Jokic. I think that's the overarching theme here. What do you do? I tell you what, I'm going to have my eyes peeled on this matchup Saturday. We get Nuggets-Wolves on Saturday. Those historically been some pretty fun battles between those two teams over the last 2-3 years at the very least. Wolves defense quietly playing better. We talked a little bit about them struggling to start the year. They're probably going to have their hands full with Mr. Jokic. I know how you feel about the center matchup in particular, but
It ends with a three. It ends with a turnaround hook shot. It ends with a fadeaway. It ends with the shuffle. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Nikola Jokic. Shout out to the Denver Nuggets.
Hit the horns, the guys.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us. You can follow me on socials at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. Oh, yeah. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. You don't want to miss us on Tuesdays and Fridays. And in general, lots of great content coming on the channel every day. So you want to be able to check in with us. And also, quick teaser, a couple of weeks from now, but we are going to go to the mailbag for the first time this season. is coming up relatively short order. You know, we got a holiday coming up. So if you do have NBA or WNBA questions for us, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Just start thinking about it. If you got some basketball thoughts for us. But thank you for rocking with us. We will catch y'all next week.